Welcome to Cruelty Podcast. This is Lillian, and with me back again is Willow.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I've been gone for forever. I know, sorry. I have a toddler, and life is crazy right now.
It's not been swell, no. We say this every time. We're always like, life's just beating me to death.
It's just hard.
It is. It's difficult. Just hard.
But
it's okay.
No, yeah, and the case that I'm doing tonight, the thing that we're about to talk about, I actually found this last minute, and it just kind of slapped me out of nowhere, and I just had to talk about it. So I actually moved some cases around, and I was like, nope, talking about this one. So I've been focusing on this case for the past couple of days.
And I've been ill. Yeah, so, but I'm better today.
Good.
Yes. I feel like my, well, not entirely, but I'm almost 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll have some business time at the end of this episode for some various announcements that I have. But let's get into it, shall we? I don't even know what this case is called or who it's about.
This case is about Michelle Blair, and she is also known as Freezer Mom. This case is rough. This is huge trigger warnings to all kinds of really terrible things to children.
So I'm going to say it.
Do it.
If mentions of abuse of all kinds, violence towards children,
graphic detail and
graphic
content.
Details. We do have some audio for this episode. While I don't know anything about the case, I do listen to the audio ahead of time so I can know what the, you know, fuck I'm talking about. Yep. Anyway, if you are sensitive to this, totally understandable, you gonna want to skip it.
Yep.
And don't listen to it on a speaker at work.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And I wouldn't listen to it in front of children either.
Absolutely not.
Because somebody had messaged me the other day that said, like, their 12-year-old liked our podcast, and I felt a little... say some stuff sometimes.
Yeah, this one's not for them.
No, this is a NSFW all the way, so please be advised, and we are not offended if you have to skip it, truly.
And we do have some audio that came from the court cases, so... They are bleeping out the minor children's names who were minor at the time of the court case. They are not minors anymore, so I can use their name in the podcast. But I'm just letting you know ahead of time if you are auditory sensitive, the bleeps are really loud.
They are really loud, yes.
Yeah.
So, and there's not much, I mean, producer Will doctor that audio to make it more palatable to your ears, but it's still jarring, just keeping you advised. Yeah. And let us move on.
Yeah, so with our theme of murderous mothers, this is Michelle Blair. And in Detroit, Michigan, on March 24th, 2015, an eviction crew showed up at the 36th District Court, or from the 36th District Court in Wayne County. They entered the home of Michelle Blair, who was not home at the time. They were serving her an eviction notice. And because she lived in government housing and was several months late and, you know, they were there to serve the eviction notice, they just were allowed to let themselves in. And they let themselves in. They started removing her items from the home. One by one, they started piling her stuff up on the curb and... The apartment was just disgusting. It was filthy. There was mold and roaches and just grime and filth everywhere. There's four children that lived in this residence, and just the amount of just gross filth that they lived in was appalling enough. Then they came into the living room and began removing items from the living room, and in the living room was a deep freezer.
Oh, Lord.
This deep freezer had a chair sitting in front of it, as if it was like a timeout chair. And inside the deep freezer were two bodies of two children.
Jesus Christ.
One was a 13-year-old girl wrapped up in plastic, and one was a 9-year-old boy wrapped up in his favorite blanket. The 13-year-old girl, her name was Stoney Blair. And the 9-year-old boy was Stephen Barry. They were both Michelle Blair's children. Authorities were immediately contacted, and they began searching for Michelle Blair immediately. It didn't take long for them to find her because the neighbor, she was at one neighbor's house and another neighbor saw her and her children sneak out the back door and go there. So as soon as the cops showed up, they were like, oh, she's over there. We saw her. So they found her pretty much immediately. And immediately the children were taken in. The scene was being processed and the children's remains began defrosting. It took them 3 days to get them to a temperature appropriate for autopsy.
That is so terrible.
The autopsy would later concur that Stephen died on August 30th, 2012.
He'd been in there 3 years.
Two and a half, yeah.
Two and a half.
2 years. Stoney was pronounced dead, I think, 9 months later. But for 2 years, those children's bodies were in that freezer, and the other two children...
They knew.
One of the children helped put Stoney in there. The other child was there through all of the beatings, and all the children were there through all the beatings and all the murders and knew that those children were there.
What was that chair doing in front of that freezer? Was it a timeout chair?
It looked like it to me. It was never stated. Nobody, like, in all of the documentaries and the podcasts and everything that I've listened to, nobody really brought up that. But that is one of the most haunting photos from this crime scene. And
I'll link it, of course. Facebook, yeah.
Because, and let us know what you think, because, like, it really does look like a timeout chair.
That is torture.
Yes.
On every level.
Every level. And these children were tortured from, I'm assuming, day one. Because just the marks on the living and favored children alone, these children lived in a nightmare.
Well, I want to say something really quick before we go any further in the case, and that is about messy places, even filthy places.
Right.
I will tell you right now, I ain't going to judge you.
No.
Me and Maris have made it kind of a life goal to help people get their shit together when they've got a really messy place, because I had a really messy place.
I've been there. I used to clean people's houses, and a lot of times for practically free, if not free.
Yes.
I'm totally there.
We're always there.
Absolutely.
Like, if you in a tri-state area and you really need some help getting your shit together, maybe I would go. I would help you.
I think this woman...
It's indicative of past, of depression, of other mental health issues, and I want to be sensitive to that. I don't want some single mama out there who's really depressed and sad sitting there in a messy or filthy house and then feeling like she's...
Because, girl, same. I've got laundry piled up all over my couch.
I'm talking about you got cockroaches, and if you got piles of trash and you know your kids deserve better than that, I don't want you to sit there crying and feeling bad. Go get some help.
No, because that's what this month is all about, is encouraging us natural everyday mothers to not be so hard on ourselves. Like, I know this is true crime and shit sucks, but, like, hey, be easy. Like, you're not a shitty mom.
You're not a shitty mom because even, and I mean this, even if you got, like, dishes in the sink with maggots, girl, you're not a bad mom. You are an overwhelmed person living in an existential nightmare like us all. And if you can get help, don't be embarrassed. Get your help.
Right.
And because you know plenty of people like me and Amaris out there who would come and clean your house.
Right.
And I have been ankle deep in trash. I have scooped up dead pets out from under beds. I just want that to be said, because it used to be something that made me feel really bad.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, and I never want to...
Shame anybody.
Never. Especially for things we can't help.
Exactly. And so I'm sorry to interrupt, because I don't want you to get displaced, but it was important for me to say that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Always. But no, I think, a lot of this was involved with the trauma
and
the abuse, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because the things that she did was vile. So, okay. So upon the autopsy of these children, Stoney had died from multiple blunt force trauma and other various traumatic injuries. Stephen had died from multiple blunt force trauma, as well as thermal injuries.
That's going to be burns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He had been tortured for 2 weeks straight and died just of his torturous injuries. Later on, we'll talk about it, but she definitively declared that she did not mean to kill Stephen. It just happened through abuse.
My God.
She was like, it just happened, and honestly, I'm kind of glad.
Jeez.
Yeah. But Stoney, she openly admits that she definitely murdered Stoney and meant to. And I think that the children for the 2 years that these children's bodies were in that freezer, I think the other children were obviously told numerous times that
that's where you're going to go. That's where you're going to go if you don't. Jeez. God.
Yep. Yeah, it was found that Stoney had been hit repetitively with a 2x4 piece of wood and was doused with boiling hot water, strangled with a t-shirt, and suffocated with a plastic bag. When they found Michelle Blair and her other two remaining surviving children, they were next door, like I said, hiding at the neighbor's house. And when she first was questioned, she at first was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And they're like, we saw your children. And she was like, oh, yeah, that. I did that. Sorry. And, like, just, like,
real wrong,
yeah, and just, like, immediately was handcuffed and taken in and was immediately, like, proud of what she did.
This is not like a whodunit.
No. No, this is very much, like, even when she goes into court and everything, she immediately says, like, I did this. This is, I am guilty of first-degree murder, and I killed these kids. Let me tell you how. And I would have done it again. Like,
my God.
It's really fucked up. And here's why. Okay. So, oh, wait. Before I get into, like, the reasons why, I want to talk about the two surviving children that were with her. Because when they took her in to custody, she kind of kept quiet until they got there. And while they're getting her there, they're looking over the children that are remaining. And so the two children had never gone to the doctors ever. Because they've always been covered in bruises.
Yeah, she couldn't take
that
them.
She could have never taken them.
Jeez.
Yes. So, the two surviving children were Gabrielle, age 17, and Matthew, age 8, her oldest and her youngest. They were taken into state care, taken to the doctor. Matthew, the 8-year-old, they found 25 scars and injuries on his body. New and old. As well as loop-shaped scars that were indicative of being hit with an extension cord, which they found on the scene.
Oh, Lord.
Gabrielle experienced a lot of the same types of injuries, as well as burn marks with a curling iron, a cut over her eye, which she said was from her mom hitting her head in the head with a 2x4. She had a knocked-out tooth from her mom hitting her with the curling iron. The children were first processed through the state, but first sent to their closest relative, which was Michelle's aunt and her aunt and uncle. I'm going to get into the aunt here in a bit. I just kind of want to give you the straight facts. I'll tell you what I think about the aunt.
It's not good.
I'm just pointing my finger.
Uh-huh. I know when that finger come out.
I'm a little upset. I'm not saying that she's a bad person, but I'll have that later. So, they both received counseling immediately and were, like, state awarded. I say awarded loosely. I don't like that term. But they were given counseling basically for life. They will always have someone to turn to, which I think is really, really good. The yeah. State of Michigan really tried to help these kids out afterwards because they royally fucked up with the two in the freezer.
And, you know, Michigan usually isn't really great about helping out.
No, and I'll get into that, too. Yeah, Michigan.
We're looking at you,
yeah,
Flint.
Yeah. But today, the two children that are remaining are reportedly living very happy and healthy and miraculous lives. So, at least there's that silver lining right there. But when they took Michelle into questioning, she, like I said, was very proud of what she did. And it all stems back to her childhood. There is not a lot of evidence or documents or anything about her childhood other than interviews and stuff later on. But she was sexually assaulted by her mother's friends when she was little. One of them was a female friend. And when she went to her mother just said, well, it's over with. So what do you want me to do about it?
Great parenting.
So from there on, Michelle, being a young child, this really obviously stuck with her. This just really, she stuck with this. This narrative became something that she would repeat over and over and over again, to the point that when she had children, she was telling her children, young children, explicit details of the abuse that she went through. From a young age, these children were just receiving this information.
Do you think,
and they had no idea.
Do you think that she did that because the intimate level between, like, a child and a mother, and she didn't really have nobody else to tell? In addition, because she'd gone to her own mother and received nothing but callousness in return, so maybe she's trying to, like, recreate that trauma to work it out.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I think there are some other podcasts and some other videos that I watch. There's been a lot of, like, psychologists that have kind of picked this apart.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of belief that there might have been, because when a child is traumatized while their brain is developing, their brain will literally
atrophy.
Yeah. And parts of their brain will misshapen and literally cause brain structural damage.
Yes.
And so there are beliefs that this could be, that she shows side effects of it later on. And so there, that does come up into question.
And you know, and when we say someone has some brain damage, I have brain damage.
Yeah, same.
So, we're not removing culpability or responsibility, but we gotta, the reason anybody listens to true crime podcasts is why. Yeah. We want to know why this happened.
Yeah.
So it's a reason, not an excuse.
Exactly. Exactly. But it does, the amount that she's focusing her abuse, projecting it onto her children day in and day out. She even says in later interviews from prison that she's very, very adamant that I told my children from a young age what is the worst thing a human being can do, and the things that bad people do to little girls and things like this. And it was just, you could tell with the way that her children,
she's stuck in this place.
And the things that her children were saying that they did after being beaten, like the things that she was beating her children out, were just things that she had said to them. They're saying back to her. They have no understanding of what a lot of this
stuff
is.
They tell her anything to get away from that pain and to please her.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's how children do.
Yes. So, before I go any further, I do want to just note that there were allegations made about abuse by the youngest children about the older children. I cannot confirm or deny, but I can say that the remaining children, as well as the autopsies, all medical staff cannot confirm that any type of sexual abuse ever happened to any of the children. The thing they can confirm is that the mother has been beating the shit out of them since day one. So that's the information that we have.
She's, regardless of her candor and her confession to where she takes full responsibility,
right. She
is still an unreliable narrator on this one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, so I just want to break down the children before we start, like, piecing together the story, who's who, what's what. As far as the children in the household are concerned, there are four children with two baby daddies that basically weren't there. I know that's a very normal narrative, but the fathers did try to a certain extent. And I know that is something that a lot of people forget to say, that, or they just write out of the narrative, is that the fathers just run away and they leave their babies. And I know that happens a lot, but they tried as much as they could.
Yeah. I'm sure she was not an easy person to deal with.
No. So the first two children were Gabrielle and Stoney. They were born from Alexander Dorsey. Now, the second was Stephen Barry, who birthed Stephen Barry Jr. and little Matthew. So it was a child of each of the fathers that had passed away. So they're going to be involved in the court case later on. But the most recent, something that I just thought was a little strange, was that the most recent baby daddy, Steven, she was actually really, like, infatuated with him. So much that she had property of Steven tattooed on her forearm.
Lord of mercy.
Like, the top of the forearm where everybody can see. And, like, I want to say that in her booking photos, you could see that. And then it's in jail. She got it because in the court trials, you can see her fresh new ink. In jail, she got it marked out. Steven marked out, and it says always, and then it has her four children underneath. When openly in court, one of the first things that she says is, hold on, I have two children. Those other two aren't mine. I don't claim them. But she has them freshly tattooed on. I don't know. You know, like, I'm just like, what is the real story here?
Yeah, something ain't adding up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I feel like with the tattoo, she's trying to be manipulative or send a message.
Right.
And I feel like by not claiming those children, she's trying to diminish her responsibility for what she did to them.
Yeah.
Weirdly, by taking the stand and the responsibility, she then reverses it by not claiming them. They aren't hers.
Right, right. Well, and because you'll see in the audio, she's so angry and so aggressively standing up for her youngest child.
Yes.
That's what she has. Like, I don't think it's a play. You know what I mean?
No. I think
this is deep-seated.
The tattoo was manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The pushing away the two children she murdered. She don't want responsibility for that because she couldn't even help it. She's just being a good mom by protecting her youngest.
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. I think she wants credit for standing up for her children.
I think you're right.
Because she's very proud of it. She's very proud of everything she did to those children. And you'll hear it in the audio. It's bone chilling. Okay. So the children's fathers, like I said, they'd be in and out of the court for the children afterwards. One of them racked up like $40,000 in child support because he was also in jail.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and when he got out, he was like, okay, where's Stoney? And she's like, doesn't want to see you. Dead in the freezer. You know, like, pretty rough. She would lie a lot to a lot of people. Okay, so leading up to the murders of these two children, leading up to this, obviously, we have a ton of abuse that happened behind the scenes that nothing is accounted for.
Are these kids in school?
Good question. Because they started out in school. They did. And none of the teachers really said anything, but
because teachers are court-mandated reporters.
Absolutely.
So what are these bitches, how far are their heads up their asses?
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing. Their aunt, the children's great-aunt,
mm-hmm.
She was a retired child abuse investigator for the Detroit police station.
Get out.
She even said she knew these children were being abused. She didn't know to what extent, and all she said was, you should be nice to those kids.
Oh, okay.
You ever think about being nice to your children? While they're covered in bruises?
And cuts. God. Mm-hmm. And burns.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She said at one point, because the judge asked her if she had seen anything or heard anything, she was like, well, I wouldn't know if, you know, this one was beaten on this one because I had left so many bruises on him. I wouldn't be able to tell which ones were new, which ones I did or somebody else did. Absolutely appalled. One of the fathers knew that something was going on because while one of the daughters was staying at their house, the father was living with his sister and her husband. The sister was giving the daughter a bath and she noticed some cuts and bruising and signs of abuse on her body. And she brought the father in and I don't think the dad was able to do anything because I think there was something tying him. He didn't want to draw attention to him from the police.
Well, yeah. But nobody likes to get the police involved in
especially,
shit.
Especially when you're already in trouble. Yes. You get pigeonholed.
We didn't want to maybe get it blamed on himself. That's entirely
exactly, awesome. Exactly, because there is no...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in September 2002 and February 2005, Child Protective Services did receive claims on Michelle. They did find that she was guilty of child abuse. But the claims were determined that even though they were true, the children would be able to stay in custody with her as long as she went to counseling.
Did she go to counseling?
Yeah. And?
Yeah.
You know, like, and? Counseling. Exactly.
But we'll take trans kids away from parents in Texas.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Just check it.
Yep. Yeah, and it was, like, generally just known that these children, you know, were suffering from abuse. Nobody really knew to what extent, but they just knew that something was up. You can tell by a person's gesture and posture a mile away.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, at one point, I'm laughing because it's stupid. I wanted to backtrack just a second. Those times that the DHS were called, it is believed, it's a kind of a suspicion because it fits up with the timeline and narrative, that it's possible that the aunt that was bathing the little girl that found those things, it might have been one of those calls.
Mm-hmm.
That
That's she might have. I
really do think that she reported one of those. But can't confirm or deny. But at one point, Michelle literally called the police anonymously, asked the police what would happen if they found out that a child was sexually abusing another child. When the police said that all the children involved would be taken away, an investigation would then, you know, ensue, and they would have to see what's mm-hmm. going on and why these children were being sexually abusing other children, because children don't do this naturally. So, anyways, yeah, they basically said that, and she hung up immediately before they could get her name or anything like that. Ugh. Yeah. So, on top of all of the physical abuse that, like, she would obviously go into great detail in court about, she would also, like, interrogate her children to determine, like, whether or not they would get a beating, you know, if they deserved a beating. She'd basically, basically interrogate them into confessing to something, you know, because she just needed to beat them, I guess, you know? And that's when I think that the children started to say these explicit things and would snowball into other abuse, just because they're trying to get their mother to stop.
They'll say whatever.
They will.
Yeah.
Any human who is being tortured for that long will say anything to make it stop.
I know I would.
So, in August of 2012, Michelle walked in on her youngest son playing with his army dolls in an inappropriate manner. Air Bunny's there. I'm not really sure exactly. She says one doll was humping on the other, but when she asked him what he was doing, she said, "Are you doing that basically because somebody else did that to you? Did somebody do that to you?" And at first he said no. She questioned him some more, and then he said, "Yes, Steven did." So she immediately went up to Steven's room and began interrogating little Steven. He's 9 years old.
He was a baby.
9. Little Matthew is 6 years old at this time when he confessed to all this happening. For 2 weeks, she tortured this little boy. Repetitively, she poured boiling hot water on his genitals until his skin came off.
God.
She put a plastic bag over his head and around his neck. She fashioned either a cord or a belt, depending on the day, and she would strangle the boy and suffocate him until he passed out, would revive him, wake him back up, and do it all over again.
That's over a fucking nightmare.
And over and over again. She beat him with electrical cords. She would make him drink Windex. Now, you'll hear part of it. I think some of this is in the audio, but Matthew, throughout this interrogation, ends up saying that his older brother made him drink the blue stuff under the sink, which was Windex. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, that must be why you were sick that one time. First of all, Windex poisoning doesn't make you just have a little stomach bug.
No.
It does so... The list of side effects are a mile long. They include, like frothy vomiting, bleeding out every orifice, like choking on shit, like chemical burns down your throat. Like, it's very obvious if a child has drank Windex. It's not the common cold. It's not a simple stomach bug. My personal opinion is that when the children got sick, they probably got in trouble for messing up the blankets or something like that. And so that must have been a trigger there.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, she made her son, her 9-year-old child, drink Windex because the other child said that he made him. And he also was beat with the 2x4 as well and basically succumbed to his injuries on his bed. She walked in one day to inflict more pain on him when she found him shriveled up, just vomit and shit everywhere, and he had just gotten so sick from all of the beatings and everything that he just finally let go. So she didn't know what to do with him, so she couldn't get rid of him. She just decided to put him in the freezer until she found something.
That's fucking nuts to me.
So for 9 months, that boy sat in that freezer. 9 months later, somehow, it's never really stated, but somehow it comes out that Gabrielle was touching the little boys as well.
Stoney, you mean?
Oh, Stoney, that's what I meant, not Gabrielle. Yeah. Gabrielle's the older one, thank you. No, that Stoney was touching the little boys as well. Now, leading up to this, her mother was picking on her quite a bit. This little girl, I think she was like, 13? Yeah, 13. She was 13 at the time. She looked, from the pictures that I saw, she looked much younger than 13 because she was much smaller.
There's probably a lot of neglect going on, and so she wasn't developing properly.
Exactly. Michelle told her that she was overweight and that she should not eat and would only give the girl one bowl, like one packet of instant oatmeal a day. So she's already gone through this long-term abuse on top of everything that the children go through every day with the beatings of electrical cords and 2x4s and all this bullshit. Out of nowhere comes this idea, I guess Matthew must have said something, that Stoney was touching him as well, but was also touching Steven the whole time, and that's why Steven was the way he was because of Stoney.
So she hated her even more.
So, again, like I said, she meant to kill Stoney. And that child was beaten out of so much anger.
So much brutality.
So much brutality. And I just really want to, like, include this imagery, though, because it is true. The 5-year-old or 6-year-old, 6-year-old Matthew was there the whole time.
He saw this.
Every single time that she would hit one of the other children, Matthew would be there, and she would say, "Okay, what did they do to you? Did they do this to you? Okay?" And then would do that and inflict pain for that reason.
She was doing an eye for an eye.
An eye for an eye, exactly. And so that poor baby child had to see every little thing that was done.
Not only see, but feel responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
And feel, and coerced out of you. You have to lie to keep from getting hurt yourself.
Because you're going to die. You're 6 years old.
And it's your mother.
And look at her beating on them.
And so anytime you confirm one of her crazy suspicions, one of your brothers or sisters dies.
Right.
In the most horrible way you can imagine. Oh, I can't with that.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't fathom it.
So, in 2013, a few months later, she takes the kids out of public schools. Drops them out of school. Puts them into homeschool.
That it went on that long and nothing happened in the public school is, like, mind-blowing to me.
That those children were covered in bruises, ain't nobody say anything.
Sure, they were dirty, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they're underfed, clearly.
Yeah.
They were so scared of her, they never talked.
Never.
Never.
Never. So, in Michigan, there is no rule against taking your kids out of homeschool and not saying anything. There is no database for children who are homeschooled.
Yep, there's not one in Arkansas either. Mm-hmm. I know my kids are homeschooled.
So, it's okay for you, but for them,
there's no school.
There was no part of the system looking out for children.
No.
So, you could just go off the grid with your children and nothing would happen. So, all four children go unnoticed by the system, and the neighbors would go to say that, like, yeah, they just one by one quit seeing the children as much because they loved the kids. And they would also say that, like, from the outside, Michelle was, like, a really great mom to certain people, especially online. She would post pictures of them, you know, like, with, like, lines like, oh, they're my angels, my world, my everything, blah, blah, blah. Like, would tell them that they, like, all their homework and stuff would be, like, super glued to the wall because she was just so proud of their work. I didn't see that in any of the footage, but these boasts, these, like, over ridiculous boasts that she has, these claims that she loves her children and all of this, it's so eerie.
Oh,
it's so eerie.
It grosses me out real fucking bad.
It's so, yeah. But yeah, a lot of times they would ask, you know, like, so where's Stoney? And she would lie, obviously, and be like, well, she doesn't like adults. You know, teenagers, they're just wanting to hang out in their room, fuck off, you know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, so Michelle, part of this case is that, like, Michelle was home this entire time. She didn't work. When the children were young, she tried to go to college, I guess, but it didn't really work out for her. And so she just decided to stay home and receive government checks for each child, as well as, like, all the other benefits, and live in low-income housing for single mothers, which is a great option if utilized correctly. And you're not touching your children.
Yeah.
But, you know, she was getting, like, almost $800 a month. Plus food stamps, plus Medicaid, plus all this other shit. She was getting that much money without any child support. So, though that doesn't sound like a lot of money, it's something. It's something. Yeah, and it covers your bills. And she continued for those 2 years after those children were dead to continue. You know what I mean? So I just don't find any excuse for her to be that late on, because she was like 20, like it was like $2,000. It was almost $3,000. It was two something.
Well, I mean, I get it, but I wonder if there was any drug use going on as well.
Nothing ever says otherwise. Because I think with drug use, you also have a lot of, like, a lot of drug use turns into flop house, which into a lot of friends, and you can't have that when you're abusing your kids. So
do you think she's, like, isolated herself and her children, the point she doesn't have, like, friends, and she's not seeing family?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's become almost like a cult-like environment.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It
That's
definitely
how it's feeling. Like, it's what it's reading as to me.
It gives me Ant Hill Kids vibes, but, like, Detroit style. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot where I was. I was, like, just so shocked about all of that. So, yeah, she would end up asking her family for money and things like that, and they would one by one cut her off. Her aunt, who, like, saw some of the abuse as soon as she started asking, because she loved Stoney. I mean, she loved all of the kids, but like she really
was just particularly close to Stoney.
And so when she started asking questions, she, like, Michelle was even like, it broke my heart. I can't imagine that she had one, but she said that it broke her heart to have to tell her aunt that, like, I hate you and all this stuff, would like shit talk her basically to get her to quit calling, to get her to quit coming by, and to basically isolate her and cut her off from her family and all of that. And I think that maybe that's why she got so far into debt, and that's why the police came knocking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But they did, and she was completely, she was examined and deemed fit to stand trial, and she did, and she stood proudly, and she even said a few times in trial that, like, you know, a lot of people don't want to listen to me, a lot of people think that, you know, I must be, like, fucked in the head or something, but, like, I'm here, I'm fit, like, listen to what I did. And so, yeah, she pled guilty proudly, and even the judge, like, I'm about to play the clip, but prior to this clip, the judge was like she was getting indicted and everything. And the judge was like, "So you plead guilty?" And she's like, "Yes, I plead guilty to first degree manslaughter. Yes, to first degree." She's like, "You don't." Okay, like she literally went through it like several times, asking the same question over and over and over again, because the judge was like, she had never had a case like this
where I've heard this audio and it's wild.
It's literally like, yes, I killed them and I meant to. And she even looked at her attorney and was like, how many times did you meet with her and make sure that this is the right decision for her? You know, like, and he was like, ma'am, we have met and gone over this 3 times and she's still adamant.
Yeah.
That she wants life in prison, if not the death penalty. And the judge was like, sorry, Michigan doesn't have death penalty. So, yeah. So, yeah. I'm just going to play the first. So, the first clip that we're about to play is her basically admitting to Stoney, because Stoney was the first child found. They go over Stoney first. Mm-hmm. And then they'll talk about some other things, and then they'll go over Steven. So, we're going to play what she openly admits to doing to Stoney. And it's rough. Buckle up.
Miss Blair, what did you do to Stoney Blair that makes you guilty of premeditated murder?
She raped my son. I intentionally killed her.
How did you do that?
Starting from the beginning, when I found out about what Stoney was doing, it was 9 months later after finding out about Stephen. So for the whole 9 months we were in the house, she was still raping my child. I did not know that. When I first found out, after told me, I took a minute because I was not understanding, you know, what was that she did that to him. But I repeatedly punched her on many occasions. My son, I told him to tell me every single thing she did to him. So as she was telling me, he was telling me more and more things that she did. I assaulted her every time he told me what she did to him. By assault, I mean I punched her. I have put a bag over her head till she lost consciousness. I threw hot water on her, scalding hot water from the faucet.
Did you hit her in the head with a wooden stick?
Yes, I hit her on her head multiple times, over and over.
Was that shortly before she died?
That was actually days before she died and the day she died.
Okay.
I hit on her back. It's like with her tailbone. I kicked her.
Okay, I just want to clarify a few things. And perhaps you don't know, but did this happen on or about May 25th, 2014?
May 25th is actually the day she died. Well, the day I killed her.
And you said you killed her by putting a grocery bag over her head?
Yes. That day, would tell me different things because she was doing this to him for years, and I did not know that. You get what I'm saying? And I didn't find out till 9 months later she had started with Steven. She ruined my son, okay? She started with Steven before he even started. So, yes, I put a bag over her head, but it got worse that day. Yes, I did. It got worse that day because she would tell me how she would take her pad, her menstrual pad, and squeeze her blood out in his mouth, okay? And it was just, it was over with after that. It was over with.
You meant to kill her?
I definitely meant to kill her.
Okay. It wasn't an accident?
No, not at all. Okay. If I had a chance to do it again, I would.
When you went and got the grocery bag and suffocated her, that was your intent?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, she wholeheartedly believes that her children
were abusing her other children and deserve to die.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the judge asks later on that if she asked her if she ever saw anything happen. And she was very defensive, obviously. She was very, very defensive. She said, no, I didn't see anything. But she ended up giving rhyme to reason for things. Like I said, the stomach illness, like the mm-hmm. stomach aches and things like that.
Clearly must have been forced to drink Windex then.
Yeah, exactly. No, not the case. She would also say that the youngest child would say, Mom, my bottom hurts. It hurts when I go poo. And she was then later to equate that with, well, my 6-year-old is not having bowel issues.
He's being raped.
And which I just don't, there was no signs. Ooh, ooh. And also the bedwetting. The child was getting in trouble for bedwetting, and it was later discovered, quote unquote, that Steven was urinating on the child's face. And unless his hair is covered in it, you know what I mean? Like, I ain't buying it. I think this child was scared to death to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night.
Any abuse will cause regression in children and they will pee the bed.
Yeah.
Any.
Yeah.
Verbal, physical, or sexual abuse. Yeah. Doesn't matter who's doing it. Mm-hmm. So her own abuse on her children is what making him wet the bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's so scared he's blaming it on his older mm-hmm. brother because he's terrified mm-hmm. of his mother.
Mm-hmm. And his mother has already given him explicit detail about sexual acts, what sexual
she
acts
coached
look
him
like,
ahead
feel
of
like,
time.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, I'm sorry, but a 9-year-old cannot ejaculate.
They just can't.
They just can't.
And not in the same way that a grown man
no,
can do, or even a teenage
no.
boy can do.
And I'm not going to show the audio. The audio is, the full video is linked in the description. And she says it in court, what the 6-year-old described as what we adults know as semen. But no, that was something.
In addition, I don't think that a 6-year-old would describe it that fucking way. Because I've listened to that particular mm-hmm. bit of audio, and I'm not buying it.
Right, I know. And it's just that all that passion and rage behind it. Like, as both of us are both children of abuse, and it's just like, I understand you. But
I empathize, too.
Yeah. But that does not...
That's where I draw the line. And, you know, I don't know. It seems to me like part of it is she just never felt heard in her life.
Exactly.
Never felt listened to in her life.
Exactly. Yeah. And now she's getting the moment for somebody to listen to her. And she's letting that passion
Like, it's almost like she didn't do any of this consciously. All of it was driven, the subconscious need to recreate and process the trauma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's pitiful.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's pitiful.
It is. It absolutely is. And, yeah, so after she went through with the judge everything that she had done to Stoney, the reasons why she believes all of this happened, then she got into what she did to Steven and those details. I cannot show you all of those details, listeners, but you can listen for yourself later. Here is a clip of it, of just, you know, mm-hmm. a minute or two of what she said that she did to Steven.
Bedwetter.
Let's talk about what you did to Steven.
The reason I put bags over Steven's head because my son told me that the plastic on his bed, because I thought he was a bedwetter, He said, sometimes, Mom, I couldn't breathe. Stephen was laying on me, and he had my face down in the plastic on the bed. I couldn't breathe, and he was humping on my butt like a basketball. That's when I got a garbage bag and started putting it over Stephen's head, and I started asking him, bitch, you know what I'm saying? You see what this feel like? You can't breathe? You stop at my... That's my son. You could not breathe on top of getting raped. You was 6 years old at the time. You get what I'm saying? So I put a bag over his head. He lost consciousness. I did that a couple times. He tell me that would be face down. He had stuff around his neck. So I grabbed Stephen and I grabbed a belt and I put a belt around his neck and I lifted him up. Like, do you like how this feels? Being choked with a belt? So I dropped him. I held him up until he lost consciousness as well.
You were intending to...
No, I did not intend to kill Stephen.
No, I'm not... Listen to my question. You were intending to inflict serious physical harm, but not kill him.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah.
That's so terrible. And you can hear the rage.
You can hear it.
You can hear it. Hate.
Yes.
She hated that child.
Yes. And very proud of the things that she did to him.
She feels totally justified in her actions.
And I think the real justification for her and her heart was that she wanted to do that to the people that had touched her.
Yeah, and she had wanted somebody to come in there and save her that way. Exactly. So she was being that person for herself.
Exactly.
It wasn't about her children, it was about herself.
Yeah, yeah. She was projecting her own
little self
on him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was replaying these terrible things that happened to her with her kids.
And how terrifying knowing that, like, you already know where your mother's rage goes to. So the second you get in trouble, you know.
You're terrified you're next.
Right. Because she says that a lot of, like, her initial rage with Stephen was his first reaction to her accusations. To her, it seemed like Stephen was admitting guilt by his facial features. Or his facial expressions. To me, the way she described it, it just, he felt defeated.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, this is an accusation that my mother will end me for.
Yeah.
This is it.
Because you know she has said it.
Well, and because look at all the beatings that they got for, you know.
The equivalent of spilled fucking milk?
Exactly.
And then you think I did something this bad? He knows he can't fight it. He's not stupid.
Exactly.
I can't imagine the terror.
Boiling hot water on your genitals over and over and over again until your skin comes off. That's a 9-year-old baby.
I can't.
And for the baby to sit there and watch too and know that if he'd ever fucked up that would happen to him.
I don't know how them kids coped.
For 2 years. 2 years that household was
radio silent.
2 years
is way too long for a child to go missing and nobody give a fucking look. And I don't care any of your reasons, aunt, who used to work in child investigations.
I'm fucking saying. I'm saying.
And you know what? You ain't gonna say she's a bad person? I fucking will, you fucking coward. I get it. You don't trust the police. I don't either. And CPS can suck a dick.
She worked with the police.
She was the police.
She was the police for child abuse. That was her job for 20 years.
Inexcusable.
Absolutely inexcusable.
Give it the way... And I don't care what reasons she gave. They sound like bullshit to me. Mm-hmm. And somebody needed to step in and save those babies.
Someone didn't want to mix work with family.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't care.
Listen, a lot of people will say this fucking dumbass quote, and it is, blood is thicker than water. No, bitch, that's not the quote. The blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. That means family don't mean shit. Okay?
We can end the episode now. Mic drop. Thank you.
I've just had enough of that fucking phrase my whole fucking life.
T-shirt.
Family don't mean shit.
Yeah. So next Tuesday.
I'm hot in the face. I know, like, me too. Pressure, girl.
I know. I was like, I need to drink my drink.
Need some Plavix up in here before I have an aneurysm. Plavix. It's a blood clot destroying medication. This This episode is not sponsored by Plavix.
But it should be, because people should have heart issues.
Look, it's Big Pharma, and I want their dollars.
Using my announcer voice, I'll stop.
So after she, you know, after her time on the stand, I believe that they took her off and allowed Gabrielle, because Gabrielle had just turned 18 by the time of trial. Bless so she was allowed to actually speak up. I know. What a survivor. Like, I'm just...
I can't imagine.
I know.
Because I barely made it through my shit and it wasn't half that bad.
Absolute house of horrors. So she stood trial against her mother, and she said that her and her siblings were abused their entire lives. She said that none of the children went to the doctor because they were constantly covered in bruises. And she stated that her mother made her put her little sister's body into the freezer on top of her little brother.
That's hell.
Yeah.
That's hell.
Yeah. Just that action, knowing that that could be you or you could be next. That symbolic act of like... But that somebody you love
is frozen in you, there. Yeah. You see their dead body.
Yeah. And those are your baby siblings. Like, she's the oldest. Do you know how much like ridiculous guilt would be put on her just from that act? Well,
I'm an oldest, and if I had seen, I wouldn't recover from that shit. I'm just saying. The strength to take the stand.
Yeah.
I don't have the words of admiration.
No. Y'all, she's doing amazing. She is out there. She's living. I know that she went to college after this. Like, she's doing good.
I hope the universe gives her what she deserves.
I hope she just wakes up one day and there's a Bentley out front and she doesn't know how the keys got in her hand. You know what I mean?
Like, and a plane ticket to some Norwegian country that has a lot of civil rights.
Yes.
Because it ain't here, girl.
I just really hope good blessings come to both her and poor Matthew.
And
I can't
multiply
imagine.
That.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Basically, it wasn't a very difficult trial.
No.
Basically, the trial was just tying up loose ends, like figuring
legally,
out where the children...
Yeah.
Figuring out like exactly what her sentence was. Obviously, she got life. She did ask for death, but they wouldn't give it to her. I just thought it was so lame. Just an aside, because like right after the trial in March of 2015, they had a candlelight vigil outside of the apartment where the children died. And though I love candlelight vigils and I love these honorable things, it just was so bittersweet to me, because for
y'all
2 years.
Y'all show up when it's too late, but you can't show up for these babies when they clearly need you. And I'm talking to the community now.
That's what I'm saying.
Why aren't we showing up for our kids, y'all, in the community?
Mm-hmm.
You may not... Mm-hmm. And look, I don't... And you know what? I can't even tell y'all what to do. Because CPS is so rotten and so fucking crooked that I can't even tell you to call them. I've had them called on me. Why? Because somebody was mad at me. Mm-hmm. Notably, they did not take my children away. Mm-hmm. But they could have. So I don't know what to tell y'all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who could have saved them, given how rotten it is.
Yeah.
But, I'm telling you, if I were 20 years younger with no kids, this country would be burned to the ground.
I know.
I'm so mad, y'all. Every case we do makes me madder, and eventually I'm just going to go out there with like a machete in my bra, and it's just going to be bloodshed.
You don't have very much longer until all your kids are adults. So.
I got 4 years.
There
we go. And then
there we go.
I'll fight somebody somewhere.
So after the trial, after she was sentenced and everything like that, they had to decide where the remaining two children went. Because even though Gabrielle was like it was in between 17 and 18.
She ain't got shit.
Yes,
how
exactly.
How you
going
to start
exactly.
a life with absolutely nothing?
Exactly. The court found loopholes that made it profitable for both children. First, before they did anything, they had to deem the father's incompetent, at least for Matthew, because they wanted Matthew, because he was so young, he was like 8 or 9 at this point, they wanted him to go into a good home. You know, the father just wasn't really fit anyways, so they found his father unfit, So that way he could go into, he was finally adopted out and everything. He has a really nice home. But Gabrielle, it would be more beneficial for her father to have custody, even though she wouldn't be living with him. It allowed her for additional aid and support in college.
Yes, that makes sense.
So they granted him custody. I think he was the one that had like 40 grand. One of them had 40K in child support.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't remember if it was him or not, but if it was him, it must have been waived in order to get that girl to college. You know what I'm saying? The judge for this trial, I gotta hand it to her. I actually did really like this judge. I really liked the way that she handled this case, and I really liked the way that she both listened to what Michelle had to say and gave credit where credit was due for the children.
Good.
She really handled this like a badass.
I'm fucking now, silver lining in this
Michelle
shit pile. Michelle
is still in prison, obviously, to this day. She has been a tornado every second of her stay in prison.
Not surprising.
She has gotten in numerous fights, numerous altercations. She has given
They don't like a baby killer in prison.
No, and she has given everybody hell. One event, she was in solitary confinement for obvious reasons. She had saved up her shit and feces. I mean, her that's the same thing. Her piss and feces in a Pringles can. Girl. And when the officer, when the guard came to give her her food through the little hole, she stuck that Pringles can through the hole and threw it all over this guard. There was even a report about it, and it was like it got in her eyes, nose, ears, mouth, hair, all down her back. Like, who? No. No, not okay.
I like
okay.
how you said feces, but then you said piss.
Yeah.
Urine, I believe, is
urine.
The
urine.
Urine.
That's how I say it when I spell it.
It is how I say it when I spell it.
But
yeah,
no, she is...
She's
a
very
force
sick.
Of nature.
She's
yeah.
sick.
Yeah, she is. She is very ill. And like we said before, obviously I'm not here to armchair or anything. I just think that it is definitely something...
I may not know what it is, and I'm not going to make no diagnosis, but it ain't
right.
But
I know that it's long-term, and I know it's something that she's been dealing with her entire life.
Obviously, yes.
And may or may not have to deal with it for the rest of her life. I don't know if
we
this is something that she can recover from.
I don't think so.
Does make sure that she is noted as giving her best wishes, wishing that her niece finds counseling that she deserves.
Well, her aunt can eat a poo.
I hope they both have days that they deserve.
Girl, yes. Is it business time?
Girl, it's business time.
Right, first of all, we say this at the end of every episode, but it's just what's happening. Y'all, our numbers are amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for listening to
We now have 20 patrons on Patreon.
Patreon.
And what I'm going to do, so you can still get on in this. So if you want some little presents, because I'm sending all of our patrons presents to celebrate this milestone. If you do this within the next... If you do this by June 1st, become a patron, you too will get a present. What are you getting? Bitch, it's a surprise. I don't know. Stickers for sure, because I already have them picked out. And me and Willow are going to design them. And if you're not a patron, of course, you'll be able to order it on some website. Right. We don't have a website yet. We're working on that.
Yes.
But I do have a storefront, so you can order it there. In the meantime... Probably like a mug or like some other cute little things, but we're going to send our patrons some love.
And
if you want to be a patron, it's patreon.com/cruelty and possible t-shirts, but I'm not sure yet because t-shirts are expensive.
Right.
And I have been every once a week I say I'm never going to financially recover from something that happens to me, so you can get where I'm at. But we're also, I want to mention, we have special things planned for this summer, and I'm not going to tell you what it is because it would ruin it, but we're calling it Cruel Summer. Cruel Summer. Yeah, like the Bananarama song.
Yeah.
And so, yeah,
we're having 3 months of Cruel Summer.
Yes, and we got a lot of fun stuff planned, so just get hype in advance.
Yes.
And another thing about Patreon is, like, I don't think we're very clear on the benefits all the time, so I'm going to tell you what they are.
Yeah.
So, in addition to getting every episode that you guys hear for free, we do an additional episode a week, mm-hmm. and it's exclusive to Patreon, which means I will literally never air it outside of Patreon,
yes.
ever. Mm-hmm. And so we take requests, mm-hmm. but we also do things that don't fit the theme and we just find really personally interesting.
Yes.
Examples of this would be Victorian UFOs, cool historical stories. Willow covers a lot, and I love every... I just love history.
Yeah.
Especially when it's interesting and not boring
and
as fuck.
And they're fucking weirdos.
They're weirdos. Like, for example, Victorian people ate mummies.
Yep.
And we talked about that. And my personal favorite of mine, the Titanic didn't sink. Its sister ship, the Olympic, did.
Yes.
That was a great episode.
That was the
mind-blowing.
Best episode, yes.
Mind-blowing.
Yes, absolutely amazing.
So that's my business. And other than that, you have my undying love and gratitude.
Absolutely.
Thank you all so much.
So many people have been reaching out. We love it so much.
Oh, I sure do.
Please find us on social media. It makes our hearts so sparkly.
But I will tell you this. If you are a cisgender heterosexual man and you want to tell me I'm hot or some other variation or show me your dingleberries... I want to say go fuck yourself or like lick my butthole or die in a fire or something, but I think you like that, so I'm just gonna say kindly go find another thing to do.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah
it's hard for me. I barely came out with it. A whole bunch of fuck yous and I'm gonna kick you in the balls, but I think people are kind of getting off on it, so I might like reel it in a little. Jesus, I have 37 friend requests in 48 hours.
Oh, I keep mine restricted.
It's locked down tight.
Mm-hmm. But on Twitter, we're...
Please hit us up there. We're trying, and
Twitter.
It's hard.
Yes.
I'm old.
Old. I don't understand Twitter.
I don't know
I'm
what's going on.
Age, so...
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm like, why can't I put a song on my profile?
Yeah.
I learned HTML for nothing.
Nothing.
It's gone. Anyway, love you guys so much, and I will see you on Friday's episode. I'm covering Susan Smith, so we can all be pissed off. Good night, and I love you. Find us on your social media platform of choice. Linktree/cruelty has all of the links. Check out our Patreon for exclusive episodes, merch, ad-free episodes, live ghost hunts, and much more. Please be sure to subscribe. New episodes are uploaded weekly. Thank you so much. See you next time. Music and production by Willie B.